This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball.
Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.
Wake up! Wake up! Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
This was a good weekend to get out of town.
Yeah.
This weather stinks.
Well, I mean, it's just cold.
That stinks.
It stinks.
I'm not a fan of the cold. I'm not going to lie to you.
No.
I do believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, this is the last, like, really serious week, right? This is the last week of winter, sub-zero winter.
Yeah, let's hope.
It's 40 next week. That would be fine.
40 next week sounds good. See,
that's good.
That sounds like, that. Honestly, I might get in my Speedo and go get some rings.
Look at that now, huh? I'm dead sexy. Look at my sexy body. Oh, yeah. Oh, look, I'm like a singer. Oh, sexy man, eating like a sexy man can.
That's a really bad image, the visual.
Let's hope it stays.
That's really... I hope that we can leave our listeners
The old sun's out, buns out. Here comes Mulligan.
Well, all right.
You ever seen a grown man naked?
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Maybe I won't wear the Speedo then if you're insisting.
Let's go.
Good Monday morning, Chicago. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Mully is out today. I'm going to be here at 10 o'clock talking about everything that happened over a very busy weekend, broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. A lot happened over the weekend. It wasn't great weather-wise. A little colder than I would have preferred on some of those outdoor runs. Nice to get outside, though. Not going to whine. It's March 3rd. It's March 3rd. That means winter essentially is over. This week, I see sunshine and 50-degree temperatures midweek. It's going to be a good week. It's going to be a fun week. It's going to be a week that has a lot of possibility. And I think if you paid attention this weekend, you were all about a lot happened over the weekend. It was a very newsy weekend in Chicago sports, and not just the Oscars. Did you watch the Oscars? I watched a little bit of the Oscars.
About 5 minutes.
I was bored.
I was too. I haven't seen those movies.
Anora was the big winner. If you've seen Anora, call 312-644-6767. Light them up. We'll talk movies.
Tell us all about it.
Tell us what the plot was. Although I thought Conan...
Saw a headline. It was an upset, though, right? It was an upset controversy.
Yeah, I suppose. I don't know if it was like something I would be able to weigh in unintelligently. Like I'll be weighing it all morning intelligently, I'm sure. Yeah, that'll get the textures going. I didn't see a lot of the movies. So I didn't have a lot of thoughts on the winners and losers. It's one of those things you kind of watch a little bit anyway just to know what everyone's talking about. You want to see the opening monologue by Conan O'Brien, who I think is one of the better, smarter comedians going over the last generation. I think he's terrific, and I think he delivered. And other than that, I don't know. I don't have a lot of memorable moments from the 2025 Oscars. So if you do, we'll talk about it later. But it was a very newsy and newsworthy weekend in Chicago sports. And I think the biggest story to me was, or maybe we should get for the best drama, most dramatic moment in Chicago sports over the weekend, the award goes to, I think Kyle Davidson delivered. Kyle Davidson, The Blackhawks trade Seth Jones, who we knew he wanted out. We knew he wanted out because he kept whining about wanting out. And I think there are two ways to approach being a captain or assistant captain or a veteran leader on a losing team. You can do what Connor Murphy has done and quietly go about your business and publicly, when you do speak, say the right things and you understand what he's going through and you respect the way that he's going through it. Or you can do what Seth Jones did and be somewhat underachieving, be a guy who isn't living up to your contract, paying you $9.5 million a year, and then ask for a trade not only once but twice publicly. And he got it. So the Blackhawks, if you were paying attention over the weekend to hockey or just saw this headline, the Blackhawks and the Panthers got a deal done. Seth Jones and a fourth-round draft pick in 2026 go to Florida for a 23-year-old goalie, I believe, Spencer Knight, and a first-round draft pick that it could be 2026, could be 2027. That's conditional. But they get the goalie of the future and a first-round draft pick, and they only, and I say that in quotes, air quotes, only have to pay or retain 25% of Seth Jones's contract. And with the salary cap increasing, it's not that big of a burden. It definitely is worth it unloading a veteran who didn't want to be here. Just a guy that was a negative drain on enthusiasm, on energy, on everything that you wanted to accomplish with so many young players in that dressing room. He's no Nick Foligno. He's no Connor Murphy. Seth Jones wasn't even a good Blackhawk. Sorry, he wasn't. He did not live up to the contract. He won't be missed. He's a terrific player. And Florida may end up winning the Cup. They may end up winning the East, which is wide open, and he may be a part of that. And you'll look back and think that was dumb to say that he wasn't a good player for the Blackhawks, but he wasn't. He's got talent, but he fell short of expectations. And so he had to go, and he went. And Kyle Davidson was on the Chicago Sports Network on Saturday talking about this trade with Tony Granato and Pat Boyle, who do a terrific job on Blackhawks Countdown Live pre- and post-game show. Tony Granato asked him a question, and I love Tony because he asked him the question everybody wondered, and it was about those comments by Seth Jones, and it was what role they might have played in accelerating this process.
And Seth came out with some comments a couple days ago that were a little bit uncomfortable, for, I think, for everybody here. Was that something that accelerated this deal a little bit, or was it? Did you feel that maybe we should do this a little bit quicker?
I think, first of all, the deadline, you know, deadlines for action, and so we were approaching one of those. But, I would assume, and, you know, I felt a little bit more urgency, I would say, once that became public. You don't want to let that linger and you know, become too much of a discussion point, even though it did to some extent. And so, I would be lying if I said that it didn't push things along a little quicker.
That's honesty. That's the question everybody wondered. And frankly, once Seth Jones sounded off as publicly as he did, calling out his teammates, I think you wondered how long they could let him linger and play and wear that sweater. So good for Kyle Davidson, not only in being honest, but in getting something in return. This was a good trade for the Blackhawks, and we'll continue to talk about what that means in terms of what they're doing and how they're accumulating draft picks, but they have a ton of first-rounders moving forward. They've already had a ton of first-rounders. The best talent is young and on the way. And we'll talk to Frank Cervelli from the Daily Faceoff and CHSN at 7:25, just as far as what the Hawks have in Spencer Knight, who was a backup to one of the best goalies in hockey, Bobrovsky, and was a first-round draft pick in 2019. And he is a very competent, capable young goalie to develop, and I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up being the goalie who emerges as the goalie of the future here in Chicago. So that would be a tremendous trade for Kyle Davidson and the Blackhawks. And good for him because he got a deal done and he didn't lose a ton of leverage, it appears, when everybody knew that he had to deal him. So the Blackhawks make big news. That was good. And then they go out and they won. How about that? I know nobody cares. But then they go out and they score six goals. They score six goals and they win when you don't expect them to because they haven't been winning a lot lately. They beat the Anaheim Ducks 6-3. Ryan Donato, who will be the next to go in all likelihood, because he's got 20 goals, and who saw that coming? Ryan Donato had two goals and an assist. Tavel has a goal and two assists. Lucas Reichel, great little breakaway there. And he had a goal. It was about time. And so they beat the Ducks, and they score six after the trade. It was almost like exhale, clean out the locker room with the dissension that existed, and go out and play free. And they did. Simple hockey. They got it done. The most remarkable thing about the six goals against the Ducks wasn't that they scored six goals, is that Bedard didn't score at all.
But that's the bad part of it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like when you look at the recap,
yes.
And he's not even made. Again, that was a late game. I mean, I'm not saying a lot of people tuned in, right? I get that. You didn't even tune in.
I did too.
You did tune in.
I did.
Okay. I did not. I read the recap, and he's like, you're not hearing a word about him. And that's what's discouraging. You're like, oh great, I saw the score, and I thought, oh great, he's got to be part of the mix.
I don't disagree with
not
you.
Not part of the mix.
I don't disagree right. with that at all. I want this next coach, whoever it is, and I don't know if it'll be Sorensen. I want this next collection of talent. I want Kyle Davidson's free agent objectives to be all related to one thing: unlocking Connor Bedard, because this season has been too static. Just there hasn't been enough growth.
And you and I talked about this off the air the other day. I mean, he's on the verge of doing something that's really never happened. To have what, back-to-back 50-point seasons for a teenager? So we have to remember that he's still a teenager. It's just been underwhelming for people that aren't diehard hockey people, and you were really excited about this guy, and you're getting your family to tune in
yes.
to watch this guy.
Yes.
And when you do, he's not there.
He was must-watch TV.
Right.
At one point.
And now he's not, unfortunately.
I don't think that he is right now. And I am a big fan of Connor Bedard, and I think you're right about remembering he's so young and he's done so much already, but the expectations are higher. And you want to see him begin to meet them more than he has. A lot of that has to do with the line juggling and the talent around him and all those things, but that's going to be the next step. This could be a huge offseason because the Hawks have cap space, they have draft capital, they could trade some of that draft capital. They need a star. And I mean star by Mitch Marner or somebody else of that ilk. But Kyle Davidson off to a good start in planning for the future, as the Hawks typically always perpetually are planning for the future. All right, the next big story was Bulls related. The Bulls, Ayo Dosunmu, on Sunday we learned, will have shoulder surgery. Ayo Dosunmu will miss the rest of the season. He's a guy that Billy Donovan has referred to as a catalyst in his up-tempo approach to shooting, you know, being the three-point shooting team and being fast tempo and doing all the things we've talked about the Bulls doing. Ayo embraced that. He was having a very good year. And you look at now what's ahead, and he's got one more year in his contract. This will be an off-season of uncertainty for him. But I do think that he made some progress. But I do think also they'll miss him. They'll miss him because he was a guy you could count on to play some defense. He was doing a little bit of everything. And this is what KC Johnson, the CHSN insider and friend of the program, had to say about Ayo's next step.
KC, what's the latest on Ayo?
Yeah, I mean, Kendall just nailed it. I mean, Ayo is a very tough player, very tough individual. I'm told that he at first was like, no, there's no way I'm getting surgery. But then they realized that this would be a long-term situation because it would just keep happening. I mean, it's something that he's tough enough that he could play through in the short term. The shoulder occasionally would pop out of joint. He suffered it last season as well, and obviously re-aggravated in New York in that Knicks game when he slammed into Brunson.
Yeah.
But it's just something that would just keep happening. So they got enough opinions where they realized that if they took care of it now, then it wouldn't bleed into next season. He'd obviously have a little bit of time this summer before training camp to get right with his rehab situation. But, yeah, certainly a tough blow, not only for him, but for the Bulls, because, I mean, we all know his two-way ability, right? I mean, he's a very good offensive and defensive player. But to me, what he's elite at is getting downhill and also pushing pace, particularly after made baskets. How many times have we seen Ayo Dosunmu grab a ball, a pass after a made basket, and get down court and score? It's really uncanny. And so this is something that I know they have a lot of guard depth, but no one can replicate those things that Ayo Dosunmu does.
Casey Johnson from CHSN talking about the loss of Ayo Dosunmu, and they will be without him. And some people will look at that as a good thing because, number one, he can take care of the shoulder now and be ready for training camp and not miss any time next year, which is what the key focus should be. There's nothing left to play for this year in many people's eyes, and I understand that. Bulls still 10th. I think they're still 10th in the standings, and the play-in is a thing. If you care about such things, most people don't. Most people just want them to put themselves in the best possible position to be as high as they can be in the draft, and we get that. But they did not do a good job of tanking, if you want to call it that, Friday night. Goodness sakes. Did you watch Friday night's game? Friday night, the Bulls, who lost yesterday to the Pacers, and that we'll get to that in a moment, but that was kind of to be expected. But Friday night, the Bulls were playing the Raptors in a game that a lot of people looked at an ideal one to lose because of what it would mean to elevate the Raptors and put the Bulls, give them another loss in the loss column. Kobe White would have none of it. Kobe White had a four-point play with about 6 seconds to go and then went into overtime and then won the game. They beat the Raptors. I know somebody who left the game with 6 seconds to go. After that final timeout, they left. Bulls were down three. The Bulls were down four. The Bulls were down four, and the one thing the Raptors could not do was foul a Bull shooter and a three-point shot and risk tying the game. And that's exactly what Kobe White did. And Kobe White stayed hot Sunday, 20 points in the first half. Pacers locked him down in the second half. He finished with 26. Bezelis had 18. Giddey had 18 yesterday. Trey Jones had 11. They lose yesterday, 127 to 112. They beat the Raptors on Friday night for a weekend split. And they have the night off until tomorrow when they host the Cavs. Right here on the Score 645 pregame, Cavs coming in hot, one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference. Bulls, their collection of players acquired in the Zach LaVine trade. Where did Zach Collins come from? When did he become such a viable big man? And Brandon Fryer, am I going to be a believer in Zach Collins now? Because I'm leaning in that direction because he's getting a chance to play. He's playing 30 or more minutes, and he's playing both ends of the floor.
Well, here's the thing with Zach Collins. He's actually a solid player. I mean, he was the 10th pick not too long ago, so he was a lottery pick. The thing with him was health. He got hurt early in his career, so that's the thing that kind of derailed him. But he's a solid player overall. Even when he's with the Spurs, he was a solid player then. He just moved around a lot. He couldn't find his position. But, I mean, you give him some minutes, he can give you a double-double, solid.
And he's going to give the Bulls a couple double-doubles down the stretch because they don't have any other choices. Vooch still hurt, not going to play against the Cavs, and maybe not going to play much the rest of the year by choice. Makes a lot of sense to see what you have in Zach Collins. I like what I see. I remember him from Gonzaga. I remember him back in the NCAA tournament. Didn't he give Northwestern fits in that first time around?
I think you're right, yeah.
I remember Zach Collins out in Salt Lake City doing some damage to the Wildcats. All right, so that's the Bulls. Over the weekend also, we saw Sunday the long-awaited, much-anticipated, highly regarded and hyped spring training debut of Matt Shaw. 0-for-3, bases loaded, last at bat, Matt Shaw at the plate. Oh, boy, I'm watching. I am watching this because I'm curious. I'm tuned in. I did want to see Matt Shaw. We got to do something about that number 77, though. We'll get to that later. If they're going to change PCA to number four, they got to change Matt Shaw to 77. That just looks bad. Matt Shaw at the plate anyway. Bases loaded. What does he do? Pops out to first base. That's like the worst thing you could do with the bases loaded is pop out to first base. No worries, though. It's a long season. It's a first at bat, first game, third at bat. He went 0-for-3. He's ramping up. But that was somewhat exciting to see him in the lineup, to be honest. Now, the Japan trip, they leave in like 8 days? He's not playing today, though, Dustin. I heard you during the pregame show.
Speculating, yes.
Speculating, but I think that they said he's going to be every other day during the ramp-up. It's a ramp-up period. I don't know if you heard that. It's a ramp-up. They're ramping him up, and the Tokyo decision is still up in the air, whether or not he goes to Japan. So let's hear what he had to say about the possibility of going to Japan.
Does next Tuesday feel still realistic for you to be where you would want to be before heading over there?
Yeah, I mean, personally, I think that I've put a lot of time and effort to be ready for this situation, but it's out of my hands. So, you know, I'm going to keep trying to do what I do every day and be consistent. And if I get the opportunity to go, I'll be overjoyed. And if not, that's just part of the process. So just keep rolling.
Just keep rolling. Just keep rolling. I don't know why he would be ruled out so soon from making that trip. And he's got an oblique. If he wakes up today, fine. He's 23 years old, right? He's going to be relatively healthy, correct? I know there's going to be caution because it is an oblique. But if he is making progress at third base, at the plate, what is the biggest reason why he shouldn't go? So he can rehab? See more pitches? I think there could be something to be gained from making that trip. I think there's something to, you know, Nico Horner's not going. That doesn't mean that Matt Shaw has to stay home too and rehab. Isn't there value in going to the going on the trip anyway if you are a rookie third baseman? Wouldn't there be something to be gained from that? I don't think that he's risking anything by, you know, skipping rehab or not training. I think this flight's fine. They're going to Japan. The whole team's going. We got to stop looking at this flight to Japan like it's a space shuttle launch. It's a trip. It's a road trip. It's a big one. But he doesn't need to stay back just so he can stay healthy.
It's tricky. I see what you're saying. And we still don't know for sure, but it doesn't sound like he's. If I had a bet, we always like to bet a little bit. I'd bet he doesn't go.
Okay.
But I think there's value in him going. I mean, again, like they're not flying coach. I'm sure everybody's gonna have like a big reclining seat. They're gonna eat well. I'm sure they've figured out how to hydrate, you know, like listen, you're gonna hydrate properly. They are playing a spring training, air quote, game against another Japanese baseball team.
Yeah.
So okay, maybe you don't want to put them out there against the Dodgers. Well, do you put them out there? You know, he takes batting practice both days. He takes grounders. Maybe you just don't have him in the actual physical game.
Value. Yeah, I think there's value in taking him on the trip.
But then I think the same thing. Then why not send Nico? Like, what's the answer? I'm saying if you're not going to send a Nico Horn, and I don't want to hear that like a hotel.
I'd send them both.
There better not be later on like, well, we just saved two, you know, we saved a hotel room.
I'd send them both.
By not sending Nico.
I'd send them both. They're part of the team.
Right.
Sox scored 18 runs on Saturday. That is not a misprint. 18 runs. I don't know if they'll score 18 runs in the month of April, but they scored 18 runs
on
Saturday.
Now, that would be a funny bit. Now, that would be funny. Like, you know, we go back to the March 2nd. Or no, that was March the 1st.
Yeah.
March the 1st game, 18 runs by the White Sox. You know, can they score?
How many regular season games do they have in the month of April? Or I'm sorry, month of March. They start the 27th. We'll take a look.
That will do, yeah. Luis Robert will probably get weathered out because they open at home. That's brilliant.
So they score 18, and Luis Robert Jr. had a home run, and Davis Martin had a good day yesterday. We'll talk a little bit about the Sox. Big weekend in college hoops. Illinois beats Michigan. That's a big victory for the Illini. We talked to Brad Underwood.
By 20 on the road.
That was a rout, and Brad Underwood kind of previewed that on Friday during our talk. On Friday morning with Mully, Michigan State over Wisconsin. That's a big victory for the Spartans, 71-62, as things start to get, it's March Madness, the calendar has turned. And down at the Underwear Olympics, known as the NFL Combine, Tyler Booker, among other guys, had this to say The Bears target Tyler Booker from Alabama guard. I loved this quote in particular.
There's legal assault out there, and I love football because the brand of football that I play, I make guys not love football anymore, and I do that every day, every down by really just giving them my all and letting them know I'm not going to let up. So the thing I love the most about football is taking the love away from other people.
I love that quote. If you are a general manager or a scout, you love that quote. You love taking the joy away from other people. That's why you love football. That's the kind of offensive guard you can get behind drafting at number 10. I think I now have a new target for the 10th pick of the first round for the Chicago Bears. If guys don't fall to them, we can continue to talk about draft possibilities with what happened at the combine, who rose, who didn't, what happened. David Siverson from Our Lads will join us at 8 o'clock. We've got a great show. Frank Cervelli, 7:25, Siverson at 8, Bruce Levine, 8:25. More surprises perhaps along the way. We're talking Bears, we're talking Cubs, Sox, Bulls, everything today. It's a plethora of topics, a potpourri, if you will. It's Mullen Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670. The Score, the Pick Six is next.
It's Pick Six with Mullen Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mullen Haw starts now.
The Blackhawks sent Seth Jones and a 2026 fourth-round pick to the Panthers for a 2026 first-round pick and young goalie Spencer Knight, as well as retaining 25% of Jones' deal through 2030. Who won the trade? Do you still believe GM Kyle Davidson's plan?
Let's be very clear here. Kyle Davidson did exactly what you should want him to do in pulling off this trade. When Seth Jones went public the first time, you thought, well, maybe he'll get dealt, maybe he won't. When he went public the second time, it was a mandate. And it was Seth Jones daring the Blackhawks and pushing them closer to this point of no return, as it turned out. And that's why Kyle Davidson telling Tony Granato that there was an increased sense of urgency after those comments by Seth Jones. It accelerated the process. That made it harder to trade him as well. Not easier, harder. Seth Jones wanted to go to Dallas and Columbus. Those were his top choices. He has a no-movement clause. Made it even harder and complicated. Florida makes a lot of sense. Look, if the Panthers win the Cup and Seth Jones has something to do with that, they will not worry or whine or complain or mind trading a first-round draft pick and a goalie of the future. Their backup goalie. They have one of the best goalies in hockey, Bobrovsky. So they can afford to trade the guy who was the goalie in waiting. But Spencer Knight to the Blackhawks is their goalie of the future, as it appears. And Kyle Davidson getting a first-round draft pick and only having to retain 25% of that salary is a win, a big win. Hawks have had 8 first-round draft picks the last 3 seasons. They've got 2 more this year. They've got 2 more the year after that. This is how you bottom out and try to climb back. We're ready for the climb back, though. Hawks need to go out and spend some money. Hawks need to be serious about winning. We thought that was this year. It's not. It's got to be next year. You won this trade. Now you got to start winning some games.
Totally agree. You won the trade. Win some games. This also was the end, right, of the Stan Bowman era,
yeah.
Meaning like this was the last guy on this current Blackhawks team that had Stan Bowman stink on him.
Yes, you're right.
Right? Like, yeah. So now this is completely Kyle Davidson didn't give the Seth Jones contract to Seth Jones. That was Stan Bowman. So now this is okay. That's it. Now there's no more excuses, Kyle Davidson. A buddy of mine lives down in Miami and follows the Panthers pretty closely. He said there's a lot of great reports on this kid, this goalie, and that this is like this guy's going to be good. But you want to see him right? Don't we want to see him?
Want to see him right away?
Immediately,
right away,
right? So
he was a first round draft pick,
right.
13th overall.
So let's see Soderblom and him. Bye bye, Peter Mrazek. Bye bye. No more of you. Thanks for playing.
Trade deadline's Friday.
I love this trade from Kyle Davidson. I think he did a solid job. I know he gets a lot of criticism. as he should, because you want to see a second star with Connor Bedard, and that's his goal to find that. But with Seth Jones talking, we talked about it. I don't even think Seth Jones played that well. So the fact that this season, and if you think about his whole Blackhawks career, I don't think much of it. So the fact that you got a conditional first-round pick for it, I mean, bravo for Cal Davison. Yeah, you're paying 25% of the salary, but that was expected. You wanted to know how much. 25%, okay, it's not bad. You're not paying half. You're not paying the majority of it. It's okay. But I'm really excited to piggyback off what Dustin said, is this Spencer Knight kid. Because same thing, I researched him. I was like, I want to see more about this Spencer Knight. And rave reviews. Like, the team is just so good in the Panthers, to me, that that's the only reason why. And the goalie ahead of them is better right now. But they need some goaltending. It makes me think about that game they played when they played against the Golden Knights, when they scored so many goals, but then they gave up just as many. So you need a young goaltender to help along. Maybe this guy can be a nice building piece with Connor Bedard. So overall, I love this trade. Good job by Cal Davison.
Such a good question.
With the Underwear Olympics, known as also the NFL Combine, wrapping up after the weekend workouts, what stood out from a batch of potential offensive linemen? LSU offensive tackle Will Campbell's short arms, Alabama guards Tyler Booker's credentials. Anything else stand out?
Watching these guys run the 40 is amusing. And they ran the 40 yesterday, and I found myself between the Cubs and the NFL Network's coverage of the Combine, kind of going back and forth, and fascinated by some of the speed of some of these linemen. Will Campbell, I think, ran a 4.940. That's moving. That dude can move. He's an athlete. I looked into this arm length thing, and I know that it's interesting because you can definitely point to examples of guys, and it does matter. I'm not going to diminish the value of it, but I also think that when you got a guy like Will Campbell, who has blocked as many future NFL pass rushers as he did at LSU, you like the way that he attacks the edge rusher. You like the way that he has found a way to make that anything but a weakness. He scoffed at it. It may be a situation that will cause him to move inside. I even looked up Peter Skronsky's arm length compared to Will Campbell's arm length, and I think that there's maybe a half of an inch difference. Maybe even less than that, 32 5/8 and 32 1/4, something to that degree. Peter Skronsky got moved inside. He was a terrific offensive tackle at Northwestern. He's going to have a terrific NFL career. So will Will Campbell. So I found myself down that rabbit hole. And then listening to Tyler Booker, as we heard in the opening segment, I like his nasty. He's nasty as an offensive lineman. An offensive lineman needs to be nasty, tenacious, attacking. He would fit that Bears locker room, and I think Ben Johnson would love him. He might be his Penei Sewell. He may play guard, but that might be the guy. And then, obviously, how can you talk about the combine over the weekend without talking about Kem Scataboo, the running back that all Bears fans will fall in love with if he ends up being a Bear? And he did meet with the Bears brass. He also jumped 39.5 inches for the second highest vertical among running backs. Kid's an athlete. So there are a lot of things that may have nothing to do with what's on the tape, but what was on the TV screen over the weekend was entertaining.
It's always entertaining, right? Seeing these big human beings move at the rate that they move is always very, very impressive. I don't want to butcher the guy's name, but everybody saw him. The South Carolina safety basically could be an Olympian. His numbers were off the charts. Something the Bears need, right, David, is a safety. So, I mean, I'm not saying a 10, but I'm just saying maybe in the second round, depending on how much buying they do as the free agency period gets going as early as March the 10th. But it's always about measurements. Everything is about measurements down there. So at the Senior Bowl, Jalen Milroe's hands were 8 3/4 inches. at the combine, his hands were 9 3/8 inches.
Come on!
How did that happen?
How did that happen?
I mean, it blew chew. I mean, like, how does one's hands grow between what? How does that? And then all this talk, you mentioned it. Will Campbell, his arms. Okay. How about this? If you don't trust him at tackle, go ahead and draft this guy's Bears. Go ahead, move him to guard. And then eventually when you get done with the current left tackle, Braxton Jones, move him out to left tackle once he figures out how to play at the NFL level. But this whole, you know, and then the edge rush, Jack Sawyer. So now, you know, he had a great national championship game against Notre Dame, but people are upset about his. The guy can play football.
Yes.
Okay, it's all about playing football.
It's about playing football.
I mean, when you put the shoulder pads and pads on, much different than when you have your Lululemon shorts on and your track shoes on, running around on the AstroTurf at Lucas Oil Stadium. Very, very different. Those are two. These are not the same.
Nick Emmanuel is the South Carolina that safety, guy. I believe. Okay.
But his numbers were crazy, crazy. I mean, just. It was like unbelievable. Jumped out of the place. His 40 time was unbelievable. Just somebody like Olympian type numbers.
I feel indifferent about the NFL draft combine just because of the fact that to go off what Dustin's saying, I just look at the film. The film would tell you. But I do like hearing from these guys. And
right.
I got to say this. I love. I told you this, David. I love Tyler Booker. I love him. I hope he's the pick at number 10. Now. You know, he's kind of projected more in the teens, but I feel like he can have that Darnell Wright type of kind of push as he rises up. And I see that with Tyler Booker. I love how he talks. We played his cut. You know, he said we got audio too that he said he's modeled his game after Trey Smith. I mean, if you missed out on Trey Smith and he was your target, you got a younger guy who's cheaper. And he models his game after not just Trey Smith, Quentin Nelson, too. You got to love
that. Those are two nasty guards.
And like you said, nasty's the key. And with Tyler Booker and Will Campbell, one thing that you're getting from both these guys is the nasty. I love how they talk, and that's what you need for this offensive line.
Just to close the loop on what Dustin was referring to, Nick Emmanuel, the South Carolina safety, 6'3", 220. He ran a 4.38.
I mean, come on. I mean, come on. Think about it. That's so fast. And that matters. Like, the safety,
yeah.
Safety 40 times, those matter. You know, yeah, how fast the safety goes in a straight direction.
Okay, I know. And you fall in love with these ideas, but then you think, okay, Bears have three of the first 41 picks. If they used one of those on a safety, we'd come in Friday morning or the next Monday and say they wasted a pick on a safety.
Depending on what they do. And here's the thing. Are we assuming that Brisker's back? Like we
no.
That's something I'm a little bit disappointed, and I don't know if you – but I'm just shocked that we've had access two times to the Bears general manager and the new Bears head coach, and I don't think Brisker's name ever came up. I mean, let them say, too early to tell, can't talk about that. But how is Brisker? Is anybody following him on social media? Is he active on social
media? He's talking like a guy who is going to come back.
Okay, good. But then I'd love to hear that from his general manager or his head coach.
Because he also sounded like a guy last year that was ready to come back.
Well, you know he wants to come back, right? Like, he's not a guy. He's not soft.
True.
Nobody's going to use the word soft with Brisker.
He's also not 6'3", 220 and runs a 4.38.
No. So,
That's a great question.
Ayo Dosunmu is going to miss the rest of the season and have shoulder surgery. How big of a setback is this for him and for the Bulls? And how much could either Ayo's developments stunt him or his trade value? Which is the bigger concern?
I don't know that Ayo Dosunmu is going to be a part of the Bulls' future. And I think that's why this injury and this season-ending surgery is even a little bit more significant. There are two things that are true. Number one, Billy Donovan is exactly right. Ayo Dosunmu embraced this new style of play. The pace and the approach and going downhill when you needed to. And just he was terrific when he played and when he was healthy. So he is somebody that, as we know, has he's outplayed his draft status. He's been an asset to the organization. And I think there's a part of you as a Bulls fan that says, local guy, he's the ideal Bull. He's a consummate competitor. Keep him for as long as you can keep him. That's why that when he signed the contract extension through next season, everybody was happy. And he's got that deal through next year. Next year's a contract year, which is why the other thing could be true. He's also a trade piece this summer with an expiring contract that might help in a deal, a bigger deal, if you're going to make such a deal. And I don't know what the Bulls are doing because I'm not sure they know what they're doing. I think when you hear listen to the Give Me the Hot Sauce podcast, Stacey King and Mark Schanowski, they interview Arturis Karnišovas, and it's back and forth. It's more the same that we have heard before. I don't know if the Bulls are embarking on a path where they're going to be active in free agency and try to go for a playoff spot next year, or if they're going to try to bottom out over the summer by getting rid of all the assets so they're playing for the 2026 draft, which AK says is pretty good. Everything seems pretty good. They're going to get a pretty good player. They're going to have a pretty good draft. You know what the season has been? Not pretty good. So when Io goes down, I think I understand why there's disappointment, and I think that there's concern about, well, let's hope that he hasn't played his last Bulls game, because I would rather see him right now coming back and staying in as an asset to this organization and the city rather than moving on and put it on another uniform and say, oh, you remember when he was a good Bull.
Yeah, I agree. I hope this is not the last we're going to see of him. Here's the thing. I think if the Bulls were even pretty good, David, instead of being pretty bad, that Io would not be having this surgery. I think management probably said, listen, you need it. We don't want you to have this in the off. We want you to be better sooner than later. So why push it? We're not going anywhere. I think this was more of a management decision than an Io decision. I believe what Casey Johnson said on CHSN, that, again, he's another guy, tough as nails, and wouldn't have voluntarily had this surgery. So, again, this helps in hashtag capture the flag.
This, to me, hurts more of his trade value. I'm with you guys. I don't want to see Io go. He's my second favorite Bull behind Bouzelis. I love the local guys, and I love the way they play. So Io is a solid player overall. To go back what you were saying, David, too, just to take it off this a little bit, the AK interview with Give Me the Hot Sauce, the thing that bothered me with it was, like you said, it was back and forth. It was the same stuff we're hearing. We're rebuilding, but we're still trying to compete for the play-in. We're trying to look at the draft and just get a very good player. I don't want a good player. I want a great player. Like, I want a plan in place, a more of a solid plan. And good to me is just like average. That's where you're at, 9th, 10th. You're in the play-in. I want more. But Io, you want him. I do agree. I think it was a management decision. I mean, at this point, we're trying to just get those lottery balls up. So overall, I think it helps in this long term for this offseason. And then maybe, who knows, if he's better, maybe he might get traded in the offseason, but I don't want to see him go.
Matas Bouzelis is your favorite Bull?
Yes.
How many people do you think are out there where that is the case? Bulls fans. I wonder. This should be a good question for later. Matas Bouzelis is your favorite Bull? Interesting.
I mean, he got one of the biggest applause to me when they say his name in the starting lineup, so
I don't know if that answered the question.
That is the voice of Billy Donovan. On Friday, Coby White hit a four-point play with just 5 seconds left that sent the game into overtime where the Bulls beat the Raptors. Did this team get any better after the trade of Zach LaVine and the injury to the Vooch instead of worse? Are there new pieces, Zach Collins, Kevin Herter, and Trey Jones, worth keeping around?
It's a question I didn't really ask seriously after the trade. It's one I didn't think we'd be asking this long after the trade. But I watched the Bulls on Friday night, and I watched them again yesterday, and they didn't beat the Pacers. It was a better game than I anticipated against the Pacers, a playoff team. They played them tough until the fourth quarter on the road under different circumstances and without Io. And Herter didn't play yesterday. But I'm impressed with Zach Collins, and I haven't been disappointed by Trey Jones. He definitely pushes the pace. He's a guy that can be a catalyst offensively. I don't know if they're better. I think it's absurd to almost ask, because Vooch and Zach were guys who were having all-star-like seasons. And yet here the Bulls, they're playing pretty well together. This is a credit to me, to Billy Donovan, as much as anything. I know people like to criticize him, look at their record and all that. But Billy Donovan has not let go of the rope. I love the fact that he still coaches to win. And I understand why that doesn't make sense, and it bothers some people, because they pull out the percentages and say, well, you know, instead of a 10% chance, he's got a 6% chance, and that's all on Billy Donovan. Okay, that's on everybody. But when we have these conversations moving forward, I want this to happen. I understand the math, people. I understand the logic. Show me an example where it worked. Show me an example where somebody tanked and it worked in the NBA. Show me an NBA example, or several of them. And don't talk to me about David Robinson or Tim Duncan, and don't go back to the modern day. Last 5 to 10 years. Tell me an example where it worked.
Well, I mean, I was a little bit surprised they beat the Raptors. That's for sure. That did not help. Hashtag capture the flag. I guess maybe Zach Collins. I mean, if Zach was still here, they would be in more games. If Zach was here, they probably win the game against the Pacers yesterday, just because of, from an effort standpoint. I think the Pacers took them not seriously. It was a weird start. It was a 3:30 tip, so like 4:30 Eastern, 3:30 Central. Just an odd time. And I think these NBA guys are in a real routine, and they don't play a whole bunch of day games ever. So I just think that might have also played into this if it was an 8 o'clock Eastern start, a 7 o'clock Chicago start. So there's no way they're better. And David, to your point, are we really sure what the Bulls' plan is? Not really. And I'm still, you know, I'm more concerned. And we could listen to this Billy Donovan cut again. I used it during the pregame if you want to go there. But I'm confused about why Bozelas is not playing in the final moments of games. And it's about his maturation and this, that. That's about his maturation? Are you trying to win? Was he not in because they're trying to lose, but they don't want to tell us that they're trying to lose? So I think that's something that's interesting. Like, why is Matas Bozelas, young Brandon Fryer's favorite player, not playing at the end of games?
That was a diss.
I know that's a diss. So, first off, no, they're not a better team, I don't think. Anytime you lose, I know Dustin doesn't like him, Max Levine, but anytime you lose a former all-star, I don't think you're better overall. And then on top of that, when that trade happened, your next best player, Vooch, was actually worse, and now he's not even playing anymore. So I don't think they're a better team. I think what it is now, you got a lot of young players and a lot of guys that's probably on expiring contracts are just trying to prove themselves, and they play a little bit harder. The only player that I see that got a lot better from this is Giddey. From it all, he looked like he's improved because he got the ball more in his hands. But, I mean, the Bulls seem like they don't have a plan. That's why this team's so up and down. Now, these pieces, Zach Collins, you know, Trey Jones, Herter, I think these are solid pieces to have around, but I don't know if it's worth keeping them that much. I'd rather see the young guys play and just keep going from there.
It's a great question.
That is the voice of Matt Shaw, and with Matt Shaw making his Cubs spring training debut on Sunday, about 2 weeks before opening day in Japan, he went 0-for-3. How would you assess his chances of making this trip, and what'd you think? And how much was it nice to see Gage Workman and John Birdie factor into the decision on who goes, who doesn't go, who plays, who doesn't play when they get to Japan and play a real game, believe it or not, on March the 18th, a real Cubs game?
I love that Craig Council said just enjoy the day, and that's what he did. And his interview in the dugout with Elise Menneker indicated that he was having fun. I like the fact that he was interacting with Justin Turner, which is a great it's a great guy to learn from and a great little combination and relationship to keep an eye on. I don't know if he's going. I hope he does ramp up and they take him with, because I think there's value there. I hope he's on track to start opening day. If he isn't, soon thereafter. I won't be disappointed necessarily. I won't be devastated if he doesn't go on the trip. Maybe a little disappointed. I wonder, as Gage Workman looks really strong at the plate as a left-handed component, do they think an option early would be platooning there? I don't know. John Birdie, he's versatile. He played second base yesterday and made a nice play. The Cubs have better depth at the infield spots. They have better depth on the bench than they did a year ago, and that's progress. So I hope Matt Shaw continues to improve and progress, and I hope that they find room for all these good bench pieces.
I find it highly unlikely that Matt Shaw goes to Japan. Now, I'm not saying I agree with it. I just don't. If you're not going to take Nico Horner, then why would you take Matt Shaw? That's the question. And now, then the bigger question becomes, who's playing second base and third base? We talk about these guys.
Well, there's different injuries, though. They're different injuries.
Well, but one's a forearm and one's an oblique.
Okay.
Right? I'm saying, but we have still not seen the debut of Nico Horner in spring training, and I'm guessing that we're probably not going to see that debut until after the Cubs go to Japan, and there'll still be games in Arizona. He'll still have the ability to get at-bats because there'll be guys left behind that aren't going to go. It's very interesting. Let's see. But I think Gage Workman has done enough so far in the spring that you feel like, okay, you could get away with two games of him, and if you really had to, let's see what happens with Justin Turner. Like that, you know, for two games against his old team, the wily old veteran, let's see what happens.
I'll be okay if Matt Shaw didn't go to Tokyo. I'll be a little disappointed because I want to see him. But right now, I got spring training to watch, so I'm fine with it right now. And really, it's probably because the other, like, Workman and Birdie and even Turner, they've been okay. They've been solid. So I feel like, just to piggyback off what Dustin's saying, the fact that it's only two games, I would like to see everybody there. It's in Japan. It's the big game. But having these guys there real quick, they'll be fine. I'd rather have Matt Shaw's health be more the important long-term goal for the Cubs right now.
It's a wonderful question, one that I've been thinking about.
That's the voice of Bruce Levine. He'll be here with David at 8:25, live from spring training. And the White Sox, they scored 18 on Saturday, and starter Davis Martin was strong on Sunday. Luis Robert Jr. homered on Saturday. How likely is it that Robert has a bounce-back season? How closely are teams evaluating him this spring with the idea of making a deal before potentially opening day?
If he has a strong spring, I think that Chris Getz has got to get active on the phone and maybe have a Dylan C situation where you make a deal right before opening day. And if this is inevitable, sooner rather than later is fine, because you can get some prospects, get them in your system, and get going. Get on with it. Get on with it. Luis Robert Jr., yeah, that Saturday, that looked like the guy that you remember. Not from last year, though, before that. So let's hope that is a good sign. Davis Martin was also very good. Sox scored 18 runs on Saturday. They have four games that matter in the standings in March, beginning March 27th, opening day against the Angels. Will they score 18 runs in those four games? I don't know. That may be more than their entire output in the regular season games on Saturday. They scored 18 on Saturday. Long may it last.
Yeah, it's a pretty fun story, 18 runs on Saturday. We were talking about how many games they play four games, David, in March. So I would bet under 18 runs in those four games in March. Now, I would hope they would score 18 runs in the month of April. That would be pretty amazing if that didn't happen. That'll be really bad if that doesn't happen. But do you think they'll score 18 runs in four home games in March, three against the Angels, one against the Twins?
Nope.
No. No shot, right? There is absolutely no shot. And also, when you talk about Luis Robert Jr., the comeback from the 2024 season, why would you ever, an opposing team, why would you give him anything to hit? Now, I know he can go out and reach for, but I mean, why would you throw anything over the plate? He's got no protection in the lineup.
No protection.
Right? Zero. So, I mean, why would you let that guy? Again, he's very good. He's a very good baseball player.
I'd pitch
player.
Around him every time.
Right?
He was
I mean,
at the
would
plate.
You would you go so far as to give him just no like go to first, like because he could reach out like Kelly Lee style in the Bad News Bears and go go grab something that's out of the zone.
No, to 18 runs in four games, I do not see that happen. So I'll go with the under in that one. Luis Roberts, I do not expect a bounce back year. With this team, like, there's nobody around him. With Andrew Vaughn, like, I don't see no one out around him. I see they can pitch around him. Spring training, he's doing good right now, and I guess you can showcase that. I feel like if he does start off hot right away, you want to trade him as soon as possible because you don't know about his health, too. That's another reason.
That's the biggest factor.
That's one of the biggest things. You want to make sure. Right now he's looking good. It's spring training. You know, you're not really trying to strategize too much in spring training. You're just trying to get your pitches off and make sure you got your right stuff. I understand that. But if he starts off hot right away, I mean, I'm trading him. He should be the first name that should be gone right now.
And the Andrew Benintendi injury should have no effect on your willingness or ability to trade Luis Robert Jr.
Not at all. I say trade him right now. Let the young guys play. Let's keep it going.
You see who had two hits yesterday? Oscar Colas. He keeps hitting.
Mully's guy.
Cuban Otani. Yes. He has a shot to make the team. All right, that is our pick six. When we come back, the extra point. Bears related. You want to catch this. Keep it right here. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Based on what they heard at last week's NFL Combine that has just wrapped up, ESPN's Jeremy Fowler, Dan Graziano, speculating the Bears will sign at least one interior offensive lineman in free agency, which begins on the 10th of this month. Falcon center Drew Dahlman, 49ers guard Aaron Banks, Colts guard Will Fries. They're at the top of most lists you see out there. But what about an edge guy like Josh Sweat? With $78 million under the cap and Trey Smith gone, what's your new priority list look like 1 week from free agency?
Well, I think it's the same as it always has been. The priority number one has got to be the offensive line. And if you swing and miss on Drew Dahlman,
which I think everybody understands coming out of the combine is the Bears' number one priority, then you've got to go get a guard. You've got to address your biggest need in free agency. If you want to continue to fool yourself that the draft is about the best player available, it isn't. And then free agency is about filling your needs with the money that you have. And we have to update our mental calculators, because everything now, we've been saying the Bears have the fourth most cap space among teams. They've got the third because the Washington Commanders went out and they did a deal we'll talk about later, Deebo Samuel. So that puts the Bears now, there are only two teams that have more cap space than the Bears. So they can go out and afford to be a little bit more aggressive even. Overpay Drew Dalman because you didn't get Trey Smith. Now, if you want to settle for Banks or Will Fries, then I think that's one of those things that you can do your research and find out ways they could fit and you could be excited about them. I hope they're not another example of Ryan Bates because you paid a lot for him. We're excited about him. Remember when everybody in Chicago thought Ryan Bates was going to be the difference maker on that offensive line? And do we need to remember Nate Davis? No, I guess. Yeah, we do. We do because this is Ryan Poles' free agent track record in most recent history isn't a good one. So it makes you a little bit concerned, but okay, back to the priority list. Dalman, yes. Josh Sweat, maybe, but everybody's going to want Josh Sweat. I don't see that being realistic. I would settle for Khalil Mack. That would be really interesting if he would come back at an affordable price as Dustin shakes his head. Stop shaking your head. And if not Khalil Mack, what about Chase Young, who has played for Dennis Allen and is an up-and-comer, could be right price, right time. So give me those guys on the edge. Give me Drew Dalman in this middle. And if you want to add a guard, go get it, Ryan Poles.
I'm very leery right now. I don't believe we need to go down. My suggestion is, we'll do this on the air, we need to go down to Atlanta. We need to bring in somebody that covers the Falcons on a daily basis and find out a little bit more about Drew Dalman. And I think part of like his price tag is the fact that he's really the only one out there. And so we're talking like 15, I've seen 18 million.
Yes.
I mean, it just seems like a ton of money. I think, David, you nailed it with the Ryan Bates idea. Like, okay, like we've seen this before. We've seen that, like, so, and what are they doing? Ryan Bates is still under contract, right? Like next year,
oh, he's coming back.
He's so like if he's got to be finally healthy,
he
right?
Might be your starting guard.
How about Kieran Amagaji? He could be a starting guard. Can he? You know,
what's his arm length?
Yeah. Oh, we better remeasure his arms. Did his hands grow since he played three games in the NFL? You know, no, they didn't. Did he have surgery on his hands? Did he get hand enlargement surgery? You know, I mean, do you think Ryan Poles is not ready to give up on him? Is he? No way. And maybe his better spot is inside, no, especially if they want to run the ball. This guy's got to be able to move bodies, right? He is a big human being. Probably got to toughen him up a little bit, but get his hand in the dirt, fire off the ball, and move some. Don't overspend. I would, if you're asking me honestly, overspend on the pass rusher than overspend on the interior lineman, because you still have some pieces. And then with that number 10 pick, get the best defensive player available, because you need edge, you need inside, you need a corner, and we talked about it during the pick six, you need a safety probably. You need some insurance. I'm not saying a safety at 10, don't get me wrong, but I just don't, you have failed miserably spending on offensive linemen in free agency. Do they know what they're looking at? Question still stands.
I think it's a big drop-off, too, once you lost Trey Smith and he's out from that to the next tier of offensive linemen. So I would switch gears, too. I would rather take that money and then put it more on the defensive line. So I would get a – I like Josh Sweat. I'm a big fan of him, but I do agree. I think everybody's going to be in on Josh Sweat. So with that being – I think the next one underneath, you kind of took mine, which was Chase Young. I thought about him because he fit in Dennis Allen's scheme. He also paired once with Montez Sweat, and they was once – a great defensive line together. That pass rush was really good in Washington at that time. I also like the one Milton Williams, the defensive tackle from the Eagles. Could be an interesting name. Young guy, too, that could fit in. Now you got kind of more of a pressure up in that middle of that defensive line.
I like that.
I think take that money, put it on the defensive line. Then, yes, you can go and get one of these guards, you know, the Will Fries. You can get the Banks. You can get one of those guys in. Maybe draft then an offensive lineman, because I think if you drafting a kind of more of a first-round offensive lineman so far, Ryan Poles has done okay, and I'm only going with Darnell Wright on that one.
Right, though.
I don't know about later ones, so I would say do that, and I think that would be the better move overall.
262, empty the tank and get Myles Garrett, and then your defense becomes fearful. I understand that is the reality. Any defensive line that Myles Garrett joins is going to be fearful. If you're the Bears, I don't think you're that one player away, and I don't think you want to give up that kind of draft capital. Be patient. You're in a good spot. This is could be a very productive offseason starting in a week. In a week from today, we'll be coming in Monday morning. I'm talking about the deals that may have already been struck. That's the legal tampering period, I believe. March 12th is the beginning of the when you can start signing things. But it's going to be a fun week in the NFL. And you know what? It's already been fun at the NFL Combine. A lot of wheeling and dealing. We'll talk about that when we come back, because the Washington Commanders put themselves at a different level this weekend when they made a big trade for them. It's Molly and Haw. Molly out today. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
49ers GM John Lynch said this week, Deebo Samuel has asked to be traded, and they're going to honor the request, which means this was inevitable. And so the news breaks. Saturday around dinner time, 49ers have a deal to send Deebo Samuel to the Washington Commanders for a fifth-round pick.
Molly and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Molly out today. That was Mike Florio. And I think his surprise level, everybody was surprised. Not necessarily that the 49ers would trade Deebo Samuel, but we need to touch on a couple things that happened in the NFL over the weekend because they affect the Bears. And this one definitely could. Deebo Samuel traded from the San Francisco 49ers to the Washington Commanders for a fifth-round draft pick. A fifth-round draft pick is all that one of the more dangerous, when healthy, offensive weapons in the NFC or even NFL. When Deebo Samuel is healthy, he's a problem. And he goes for a fifth-round draft pick? Number one, surprises the cost. Number two, if that's all it took, wouldn't other teams... Why didn't other teams get involved? Heck, why not the Bears? I know it's a big cap hit, and you have other priorities, and it doesn't matter. It's just for the sake of argument. I can't believe other teams were this passive in pursuing a guy who could be that much of a difference maker. You put Deebo Samuel now in Cliff Kingsbury's offense? Oh, remember who's throwing him the ball? That would be Jaden Daniels. That would be the rookie of the year. That would be the guy that ended your season with 10 games to go, or so-ish, 11 games to go, set off a 10-game losing streak. We don't need to revisit that. I'm just shocked Deebo Samuel went for that low of a price. And now the Commanders, they're not going to be favored to upend the Eagles in that division, but they've got to be considered maybe a sleepy good pick to win a sleeper in the NFC if everything goes well. They've got weapons. So that was one of the big moves over the weekend. The NFL never sleeps. A week before the league count, the free agency arrives, and DK Metcalf from the Seattle Seahawks, difference-making wide receiver. So he's rumored to be on the trade block. Corbin Smith is the insider for Sports Illustrated who covers the Seahawks. And Corbin Smith claims, heck, I think he reported this last week, that the Packers have offered their first-round draft pick and one of their wide receivers to the Seattle Seahawks for DK Metcalf. Because the Packers need a game-breaker. Well, who doesn't need DK Metcalf? But Christian Watson out with the torn ACL. DK Metcalf probably on the move. I'm not quite sure. Maybe his contract number is too big for them to absorb. A lot of reasons could be in play. It's the NFL. Do you really need a good reason? People find reasons to move people all the time. DK Metcalf coming to the division would be a problem in Chicago. Yeah, in Detroit and Minnesota too, but especially Chicago. You don't want that to happen. You don't want that move to be made. You prefer would prefer him going to the Raiders, like the other rumor, because Pete Carroll would that would be reuniting with Pete Carroll. Maybe Russell Wilson too. He's on the move. He's a free agent. Maybe he lands in Vegas because they didn't get their guy, Matthew Stafford. Matthew Stafford staying in L.A. after using the media as leverage and getting the deal that he wanted with the Rams. What else is going to happen this week? Devontae Adams going to be allowed to make a deal. Probably going to be on his way out in New York with the Jets. Probably going to follow Aaron Rodgers wherever he goes. Again. You don't want Devontae Adams right now, I don't think. He's not at that price. A lot going on in the NFL. We will continue to revisit some of this throughout the show. We're talking to David Siverston from Our Lads about the NFL Combine at 8 o'clock. But when we come back, we're going to shift gears. It was a big weekend in Chicago baseball. Had Matt Shaw making his spring training debut for the Cubs at third base. Had the White Sox scoring 18 runs. Davis Martin had a good outing. What do you want to see from Matt Shaw that would convince you that he's ready to start the season before March 18th arrives? And what can we do for his number? This is going to be crowdsourcing. He's wearing number 77. What number could he wear? What number should he wear? Give me a number and why. He's not wearing 77. God, I hope he's not wearing 77 throughout the season. As PCA proved, you need a good number to look faster on the base paths. Matt Shaw needs a new number. What is it, people? 312-644-6767. This is David Haw. Mully is out today. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.